Looking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where you're listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Here's a quick reminder. You can listen to the ACB, Braille Forum, eForum, and ACB Reports at any time. Just dial 231-460-1061. Note that long-distance charges may apply. Now back to today's Speaking Out for the Blind show. Today we have a very special guest. The Perkins School for the Blind reports that today's guest is recognized as an expert in library services for the disabled, and today's guest is active with various consumer advocacy sectors. One of these sectors is our very own American Council of the Blind, or ACB for short. She's been active in ACB for over 30 years. This ACB member has served in many leadership positions. One of these positions includes the ACB's membership committee. Today, she's the ACB president. In fact, she is ACB's first woman president. She has taken issue with discrimination against guide dog users by taxi drivers, the implementation of new audio description rules, and packaging the prescription drug label information for the blind. Today's guest joins us to talk about her journey to becoming ACB's leader. Let's welcome ACB President Kim Charlson to the show. Hello, Madam President.
Hello, Brian, and thank you for having me on your program.
It's a pleasure to have you, too. But first, let's talk about your blindness. How and when did you become blind?
Well, that was when I was a child. I lost my vision, most of my vision, when I was 11 years old due to complications from glaucoma. And as far as the medical authorities knew at the time, I appeared to have been born fully sighted, and at the age of 7 years old was diagnosed with glaucoma and had a lot of surgeries and treatments when I was little to preserve my vision, cataracts, things like that. And when I was 11, one of the surgeries didn't work out so well, and so complications caused me to lose the majority of my vision. And then as glaucoma tends to work, they call it the sneak thief of vision because it takes it away very gradually. So I could see, you know, a red car in front of me or a yellow bus or something like that. But one day I was walking down the street when I was about 26, 27 years old, and I said, you know, I used to be able to see those red cars and yellow buses, and now they just zip by, and I can't see them at all anymore. So it was really gradual, very slow, but my parents, I'm very fortunate that when they received the diagnosis, the doctor said, you know, I feel that she's going to lose all of her vision in the next few years. I think you need to get her education in Braille and other things she'll need to know to live her life as a person who's blind. And my parents took that to heart, and they made a point to move, and I was very fortunate of this, to move to the city where there was a school for the blind, where I could go to school, learn Braille, and learn how to be a blind kid, and have all the educational opportunities that I think make a huge difference for people who are blind or visually impaired to be successful in this world, and that's to have Braille skills, typing skills, keyboarding, things like that, independent living, cane travel, independent living skills for daily living so you can manage your life. And those all make a huge difference. And we see so often today, you know, what happens when it's all about the academics and there isn't any emphasis on the independent living, daily living skills and mobility for kids who can't do anything or can't get anywhere. And it's all got to be part of a total picture and not just, you know, they're great with Braille and their academics are wonderful and the rest of us not our problem. So that's more of an answer than I think you asked me to talk about, but it's, you know, my life experience kind of sets the stage for a lot of what I end up doing every day now as president of the American Council of the Blind, you know, advocating for appropriate Braille instruction and appropriate orientation and mobility skills and rehab training and all these different things that help people who are blind to live independently and successfully in their communities.
According to the Perkins School for the Blind on their website, www.perkins.org, you were the service management librarian and the assistant director of the Braille and Talking Book Library at the Perkins School for the Blind in Watertown, Massachusetts, from 1985 to 2001. How did you choose to work in this role? Why did you choose to work in this role? And in what ways did you have to speak out about your ability to do these two jobs?
Well, my journey to my current career as director of the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library kind of goes from what I had initially, when you go to college and everybody makes life changes, I had initially believed that what I wanted to do was to become an attorney. And my senior year in college, I decided that maybe I didn't want to be an attorney. I wasn't so keen about possibly going to school for three more years, and maybe I should look for a job and figure out what it was I wanted to do, which is what a lot of people do when they reach that point in their lives. And maybe the world didn't need one more attorney. We've got a lot of them. So I decided to look for work, and it so happened that a job I applied for, I got at the Oregon Talking Book and Braille Service in Salem, Oregon. I was hired to be the book production specialist for the library, which meant creating and establishing a volunteer program and training volunteer Braille transcribers and narrators for talking books, locally produced talking books. And I did that for 5 years. And I had, you know, two or three bosses in that time. And as happens with a lot of folks, you have great bosses, and then you have somebody come along who maybe you didn't think was quite as great, and you think, well, gosh, I could have done that job. And I had those exact circumstances where I had somebody who was terrific, and then I had somebody who came along, and it was, they didn't know exactly what they were doing a lot of the time. And I said, you know, I'd love to be the director of a talking book library, but I don't have a degree in library science, and that's generally a requirement to be a manager within a library setting. You have to know the rules and processes of running a library. And I said, well, but I'll never get that chance because I don't have a degree. So I don't know if it was, you know, the fates, the goddesses, who was looking over my shoulder, but one day a package landed on my desk, and maybe it was the boss I didn't like so much who put it there. Who knows? He wanted me to go away. But there was an application for a government fellowship for library science for students with disabilities. They were trying to encourage more integration of people with disabilities into the field of library science. And I applied for the fellowship, and I won. And that required that I go from my home in Oregon to the University of North Texas in Denton, Texas, where I lived for a year to go to graduate school and get my degree in library science. So that was the first step in my journey of my career in library and information science. After I got my degree, I went back to Oregon, worked at the Talking Book Library for a few months. And then I was approached by Perkins They had read about me in a magazine or some article somewhere that I was a blind person who had a degree in library science, and there weren't very many of them at the time. So now I'm glad to say there are many more folks who are blind working in the field of library science, and I've had the opportunity to mentor several people in their career direction. So I interviewed with Perkins, and I had to make the tough decision when they offered the job, which was, do I move 3,000 miles clear across the country from where I was living to take this great job? It's at Perkins. I'd always heard of Perkins and thought it would be a wonderful place to work. And so I finally made the decision and moved to Watertown, Massachusetts, which is where Perkins is located, in 1985. So I'm coming up next year on my 30th year of service with Perkins.
Yay!
16 years, as you said, as the assistant director, and almost 15 years now as the director of the library program. I supervise 32 employees, and I manage a budget of about $3.5 million a year to operate our library service. And I'm very proud of my staff, my team. We do a lot of great things to make the Perkins Library really an exceptional Braille and Talking Book Library program.
Now that we talk about leadership, what qualities do you think make for a good leader?
Well, that's a good question. When I ran for president of ACB, I think that one thing that makes a good leader is someone who understands that leadership, and especially leadership of an organization, doesn't only mean that one person does the work. That leadership in a successful organization means you have a team of people, and you empower your team, and you give them assignments, and you have expectations for what they're going to do. There's timelines, there's deadlines. There's performance, you know, you need to do it, we need to get it done. If there's a problem, we need to address those problems. So we have to have a plan. So planning is something I also think is important, along with teamwork, to make sure that things don't fall between the cracks. I am a librarian by training, and librarians tend to be very detail-oriented people. And I think that that's helpful when you've got lots of balls that you're juggling every day between work and ACB activities and the various committees within ACB, and it's my job to make sure that things are moving forward. So having a team and having lots of capable people on that team really is what makes an organization successful and makes leadership something that isn't, you know, a chore or a challenge in a negative sense, but an opportunity to really grow the organization and empower people to do great things for, whether it's ACB or whether it's your local chapter in your city or town or your state.
So let's talk about becoming the first woman ACB president in 2013. Why did you decide to go for this position?
Some people say, why did you decide to do that? Are you crazy? it certainly is a lot of work, but I decided that I felt I had the skills, and I had the support of the organization behind me to run for president. I've had, since I was elected, just, you know, the outpouring from the membership has been very strong. People were certainly very excited at the time of my election that we were electing the first woman to serve as president of a blindness organization in the United States, a consumer advocacy organization. And it was, you know, it was a great opportunity to get the spotlight on ACB for recognizing, you know, the opportunity and the abilities that I think I bring to the position to empower people to advocate for themselves. And that's really part of what's so important to me is creating an environment where issues can come forward, that people can work on issues, and kind of coordinating that whole process through ACB's, I think it's 42 different committees that work on all kinds of issues, external and what I call internal infrastructure issues as well. So external would be things like our you know, governmental relations, our audio description project, transportation, employment, international relations as examples. Internal would be committees like Convention Program Committee, resolutions, constitution and bylaws, credentials, those kinds of committees that work to support activities and functions of the organization that take place at the convention specifically, which is the annual membership meeting of the organization and is a key part of our policy setting, what are our priorities going to be. The membership is highly involved in deciding what our policy priorities are going to be through the passage of resolutions on a variety of issues.
Now, our next question, Madam President, comes from Frank Welty of San Leandro, California. He was one of our former guests on this show. He asks, what plans does ACB have to expand its fundraising program?
Well, that's a good question and one that I've done a lot of work with, along with our executive director and our fundraising and finance and budget committees within ACB, which engages quite a few folks. So just to tell some of the things that we have increased working on over the last year, one area is in private foundation grant support. We've gone from maybe submitting, you know, 2 or 3 to 4 grant proposals a year to having over 25 grant proposals to private foundations in the pipeline, so that there's much more success. The more proposals you have out, the likelihood is you're going to get some of them funded, which will help us in supporting some of the issues such as the audio description project. ACB Radio is a primary area where we're looking for grant funding and foundation support, and our advocacy work as well. So we're doing much more in the area of private grant funding. We're also working hard to streamline and increase our what fundraising is done within the organization itself through our resource development committee, some special events, and also one of our primary areas of fundraising that we're working on enhancing is our telemarketing and direct mail activities. So those are some areas that we've really kind of revamped over the course of the past year, and I think we're starting to see some really favorable improvements in those areas.
I understand that there's an upcoming class for our listeners who want to become leaders. It's the leadership training at this year's ACB convention in Vegas. What's that training, and how can our listeners sign up?
Yes, on Friday, July 11th, the Leadership Institute will take place in Las Vegas. It's a day-long intensive training for people who are interested in being leaders within the organization at the local, state, or national level. And we talk about the fundamentals of leadership, the kind of understanding what is a leader and what are the responsibilities of a leader, both the, you know, the administrative, the policy issues, and kind of the fiduciary responsibilities of someone who's elected to be, for example, a treasurer. You know, being a treasurer is, of course, it's keeping track of the funds that the organization has, but there are fiduciary requirements, there's reporting requirements that you have to send if you're a not-for-profit, you've got to file reports, you've got to understand what those requirements are so that you don't just forget to do a report, and then your not-for-profit becomes you know, in arrears of their reporting requirements, which the state doesn't like. The Attorney General's office likes people to, organizations to keep up with their reporting. And so that's really an important part of being a leader, is understanding those things. Plus, understanding how to manage groups, how to handle difficult people that you might have in your local chapter, how to make sure that all the people in your organization on your board can work together, listening to people that want to talk a lot, but being able to have the skills in place to say, okay, we need to listen to some of the folks who haven't had an opportunity to speak and hear what their thoughts are, how to communicate, manage meetings. A lot of the work of the American Council of the Blind is done by committees, and those committees work quite a lot on conference calls, teleconference. We get a lot of our work done, and there's etiquette to having a conference call. You can't have 8 people on a conference call and just let everybody talk at once. You're not going to hear anything. You're not going to get anything done. So we're going to do some role play about how to manage a meeting, how to manage a conference call, doing some of those kinds of things, and handling the governance of your organization, and following the Constitution and your bylaws, and understanding what that means, and really giving people a chance to delve into the nuts and bolts of how to run an organization and how to be an effective leader and bring others into the organization. Because that's really the ultimate success of a leader, is bringing on others who can take the place of you in whatever role you're in. That really means to me that we've been successful as we mentor others to come along and lead the organization into the future.
Madam President, you're truly an inspiration to our future leaders who want to make the world a better place. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's been a pleasure to talk about some of my thoughts and ideas, and to answer your many, many questions. And I welcome an opportunity to hear from anyone who has questions. If I can just give you my email and a phone number, if people want to reach out to me.
Yes.
That would be great. You can reach me by email at kimcharlson@acb.org, and that's kimcharlson@acb.org. And a phone number is 617-501-5853. And I look forward to talking to folks if you have questions, or connecting you with your ACB chapter in your city or in your state, whatever I can do to help. So thank you again, Brian, for the opportunity to be on your show.
You're very welcome. And before we go, let me give listeners a quick reminder. I welcome comments and suggestions about today's episode and past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
Earn big money for your ACB affiliate. Just form a team and participate in the ACB Brenda Dillon Memorial Walk, taking place at our ACB National Conference and Convention. Your team can share up to 50% of the funds it raises with an affiliate of its choice. Or if you prefer to join as an individual and just raise money for ACB, you can certainly do that too. We want to encourage everyone to take part. You don't even have to attend the convention. You can be a virtual participant from home. It's easy. We'll tell you the secrets of how other members have raised thousands of dollars in our previous ACB walks. We provide everything you need to get started immediately. For more information and to register, go to our website at walk.acb.org, or call Donna Brown at 304-822-4679. 304-822-4679.